This is Josh Findlay with the Texas Public Policy Foundation's National Election Protection Project. And we're joined here on our podcast today by Don Palmer of the Election Assistance Commission. Don, it's great to have you.
Thank you for having me.
As we always do, I'm going to forego introductions and let you start out by talking about yourself. I'd love to hear a little bit about your background and then tell us, what does the Election Assistance Commission, or the EAC as we're going to call it, what do they do?
Okay, well, I'll start with my background. I'm a Floridian. I was born and raised there primarily. When I talk about myself, I went into the Navy after college. So I was an officer in the Navy, in intelligence, and as a JAG, as a lawyer. And then I got involved with the Department of Justice and the voting section. So that's where I sort of got into voting, you know, enforcing the nation's voting laws. From there, I went back to Florida as their director of elections. After a term there, I went up to Virginia to be their secretary. So that's how I got involved in election administration. From there, I went to the Bipartisan Policy Center and then to the Election Assistance Commission, where I'm getting to sort of live in the election administration world at the federal level.
And for our listeners, yeah, they know that we're fascinated by election administration here. So tell us a little bit about the EAC and what you do.
So the Election Assistance Commission was created after the 2000 election, and it was out of the Help America Vote Act. And so it was the federal agency that was sort of pulled from the Federal Election Commission. Its primary purpose was to set up and sort of administer a voluntary voting system standard program where you could accredit labs, you could test those voting machines for the benefit of the states and the vendors that are going to be producing those voting machines. It also is going to distribute any sort of federal grant monies that the Congress appropriates in any fiscal year. And there's been about $4 to $5 billion that have appropriated since 2002. We also provide reports to the Congress. And generally, though, when I talk about the EAC, we are there to assist the states, right? And so that could mean best practices, or sort of the monies that the Congress appropriates, or to get involved in technology so we evaluate the latest technology for security and accessibility.
So even though people haven't heard of the EAC, probably your average citizen, yeah, you're at the nexus of all of the hot things happening in election integrity right now. Technology. So yes, machines and ballots, funding, everything that's happened with Zuckerbucks lately and all the bans there. So you're right at the nexus of that. What are a couple of the priorities or the things that you're working on at the EAC right now?
Well, I want to be responsive to the public and to sort of other stakeholders. And you know, the EAC has been in the middle of this debate about voting systems. And we just adopted VVSG 2.0, which is sort of the next generation of voting systems. Well, to do that, you know, from a national security perspective, it's going to take a lot of focus and resources. And so I do advocate that the EAC be well-funded to perform this mission because it's so important. Well, we want to make sure that the states and localities are able to make that transition to 2.0. And one of the other things that we do is electronic poll books and other systems that are tied to the internet. Now, those, the Congress has admitted that those are more vulnerable to sort of outside intrusion. And so we want to make sure that those are fully tested, that we have the highest security standards. And not every state and locality across the country has to have their own testing program. We want to make sure that every state of the union has the ability to use our testing program if they would like. And so I'm really focused on the national security aspect of the testing and to sort of raise the level of professionalism. One of the goals that I think that we should be doing as a country is increasing the professional training for our election officials. They need to be invested in as people because these are the people that are administering our elections, and they need the support to help them do their job better.
So I want to dive into a couple of those things in a second. But when we were walking over here, we had an interesting conversation. You were talking about how the EAC was set up in 2000 with one priority, yeah, but after the 2020 election, that priority has kind of shifted a little bit, maybe. Can you describe to us a little bit how the work of the EAC has changed over time and how that's affected your role on the commission?
Well, I think back in 2000, I think the primary mission of the EAC was to replace the voting equipment out of 2000 and provide some uniformity, both with voter registration systems and voting systems. And it took about 5 to 10 years for that process to take place. Today, and I alluded to it earlier, there's a lot of scrutiny on our voting systems. Are they as secure as they can be? And the question is, and the answer is that now, instead of accuracy so much being the issue, now it's security of those voting systems. And so we have been responsive to that. But we're only one player in this. You know, we can only set those standards, accredit the labs, and encourage the manufacturers to build those new systems. But again, we need to invest in those voting systems and our election offices across the country, because it's sort of like designing the parameters for a new stealth generation 5 aircraft. The technology may be there, but unless you invest in building it and then deploying it, you never get the benefit of that technology. Same with voting systems. If our systems today are over 10 years old, the technology, we want to make sure that we have the latest technology in our voting systems. And so we set those standards, but we need other stakeholders to get involved and make that investment. Elections are expensive. But I think the viewers that are viewing this today, they understand that we want to invest in our elections. We don't want to go on the cheap. We don't want things to atrophy and decay in election administration. We want to have the best and the brightest, and we want to have the new voting systems in place. But the only way to do that is to invest a little bit of money. And I know there's a lot of priorities out there. That's why I advocate for the EAC and our election officials that we want to do the best we can with what we have. Rumsfeld said it the best: you go to war with the army you have. I just want to prepare that for each general election, we have the best system in place.
I love that. That's a great priority. But let me ask you this then. The EAC, you're looking into all of these machine issues. Describe for our listeners the interplay between your organization then and maybe a state secretary of state office and what's happening on the ground in the counties. You know, people complain that, you know, in my county, we're using fill in the blank voting machine system and we don't like it. It doesn't work. It's insecure. Describe the way that your organization interplays with these other organizations that are maybe making the decisions about what election technology is being deployed.
Well, the ultimate decider in chief of what voting technologies we deployed is really the legislature in many cases. The secretary has a huge role in that, as well as each locality, depending on how they're set up. You may have each locality making those decisions sort of within the framework at the state level. We're a voluntary testing program. Therefore, we defray the cost of what states and localities have to utilize. But in my example is that the state had a big role in sort of the testing of systems at the state level, the certification of those systems. We relied a lot on the EAC for that testing that took place in labs. But the bottom line is that a lot of these decisions are made at the local level. One aspect of this that I sort of started off with is those state legislatures sometimes remain on the sidelines. They have a primary role in this, but you don't really see a lot of resources coming from the state level. They're usually going to be local funds or Help America Vote dollars, which is actually federal grant monies. So I've been encouraging state legislators that if you want to make a difference in your localities, choosing technology, improving technology to make our system more secure and more accurate, then you're going to have to invest in it. And to me, this is a primary responsibility of state government.
Right. So if you were advising a state legislature about how to spend money or how to choose its voting systems, what advice would you give them? What should they be looking out for?
Well, I think that you should put a lot of trust and support your Secretary of State, because if they're going to make the decision on what the voting system or systems work best for the locality, they need to have technology experts in place to do that. Obviously, we'll be cooperating with them at the EAC. So I think that is the primary goal on the voting systems. And then support, either by financial support or within the Secretary of State's office, ways to sort of assist your localities. And so that's what I tried to do when I was in Florida and Virginia. And I think that's what every secretary does, trying to maximize the support they give their localities.
Great. So let me ask you this. Are there any features in machines or things like that legislatures should be aware of? Should they be looking for? Should they be making sure that those are not part of their voting systems?
Well, there's going to be policy decisions on whether or not you ever want a system to connect to the internet. That's a big hot issue. Some states do because it helps them get results in a lot quicker. And, you know, that is a voter confidence issue. I recognize that after 2000, for example, Florida was a state and continues to this day to allow the localities to modem results in or to after the election, of course. And so that does take place. And so but the VVSG 2.0, I mentioned that that's our new standard. Mm-hmm. These are options that I hope legislatures encourage their localities to move to. And that's going to take a combination of direction and resources, because localities can't simply write a check. Some can. They're doing better than others. But when you think about medium and small rural counties, they need support from the state or federal level to make those transitions. It's going to be more of a difficult process for them to transition.
So that's interesting. So one thing that we hear a lot about, especially in Texas, right? You've got counties that are huge, like Harris County, you know, Dallas, you know, these counties with massive budgets, and you've also got very small counties. Mm-hmm. One thing that we hear a lot is that in most voting systems, there is the technology there to make it very secure, but the counties don't always buy all of the bells and whistles, all of the features that they need to secure their voting systems. What are your thoughts on that? And if that's the case for some of these counties, how should we go about paying for our elections?
Well, again, I think that, again, this is a resource issue. Now, when we test the system, it's going to be from one end to the other. That means from when the ballot is tabulated until the results are uploaded into the election management system. So that system has to be bought as a system itself. Now, as you said, there are some bells and whistles, audibility features, but again, this comes back down to resources. And so when I was at the state level, there's really only a couple of ways you help your locality. You either use a combination of state dollars and the Help America Vote federal grants, or you do it yourself at the state level. That last one doesn't happen very often. And so I would just encourage, though, that state legislatures have to change their perspective a bit, that this is just a local issue. Look, the localities are running the elections. They're the ones that are on the ground with those poll workers administering the election. But it is a part of your state function that you have good, efficient, accurate elections. And so do we really want to go on the cheap with our voting systems? I would say no. Upgrade to the latest standards, get those voting systems in place. And so your voters are going to be more confident about the process. You know, we have levels of confidence at the federal and state level because we understand the testing process where you are testing to standards, and it's a very lengthy process. We're very confident in that. But when we have this sort of delay over a decade in upgrading our voting systems, I don't blame a voter for sort of asking the questions, are our systems really secure? I can confidently say that I understand and I believe they are, but I also believe we got to move to the next level, the next generation of systems.
You know, one thing that we always say is that the legislature passes almost like a blueprint for our election system. Mm-hmm. But then at the local level, you have the election administrators on the ground that build the houses. And those houses can vary wildly from the plans depending on the resources that they have and the technology. So then let me follow up and ask this. One thing that we're hearing about a lot is Zuckerbucks and the private funding of elections. You said that the EAC, one of their main jobs, is to administer federal grants. Tell us a little bit about your perspective on the funding of elections and potentially how private funding should play a role or not play a role in the election process.
From a policy perspective, I think it's a bipartisan sort of agreement that the outside third-party sources of election administration, that's not really appropriate for a government role, a government function. But, you know, there's a lot of local administrators and some state administrators that were desperate for those. They're desperate for more funding. My perspective is that, again, coming back to what we said, is that if you want to have good elections at the local level, you're going to have to invest in them. You can't just rely on the counties to do it. There has to be some levels of uniformity of training and professional training. And then some levels of this is the type of systems we would like to have in place. Obviously, we want to provide options. At the state level, I took a lot of pride in providing options for my county. So if there's three or four vendors that want to come in with voting systems or three or four with poll books, that they have an option and they don't have one size fits all. I don't want that to be the case. But on the other hand, there should be a certain level that's expected from every county, no matter how large or small they are. And recognizing, though, that when you have 150 people in, let's say, Dallas County, it's probably more, right? Versus a smaller county, which is two people, that smaller county is going to need support. And I think the secretaries of state recognize this. And I think the legislature should focus more on those rural areas.
That's interesting. That's a really interesting perspective. So you've talked a lot about professionalism and the need for more professionalism. One thing that our listeners always comment on, one thing that we hear about, is that it feels sometimes like we're playing whack-a-mole with election integrity, right? In some places, you're talking about machine issues. In some places, you're talking about ballot issues. It seems like there's a new issue to address almost every election. How would increasing the professionalism in the election process maybe prevent that kind of whack-a-mole we feel sometimes of you never know quite what issue needs to be addressed or what is going to be the hot topic for this election cycle?
Well, one of the approaches the EAC takes is, you know, there's a plethora of responsibilities that a local administrator is going to have. And most of us, I came into this, I'm a political science major. So it's like, you know, but when you come into this job, and I think I would be a perfectly fine administrator, I did serve at the state level, but you have to be you shouldn't have to be your own information technology expert, plus your own press agent, you know, plus I'm also going to take care of all the voting systems. I mean,
right.
At some point, there needs to be the resources and the training available where an administrator has direct training in a number of areas. And so, you know, we talked about the Zuck Bucks issue, and that's what I'm a big supporter that state and there should be some federal free professional training that takes place. And we shouldn't have to rely on the Zuck Bucks for this type of thing. And I think the public generally agrees with that, but the need is still there. So the need is absolutely still there, again, particularly for those medium to small counties, because let's take Dallas County, for example. Again, Dallas County is going to have the ability to hire two or three press people, accessibility expert, an IT expert. They have the ability to spread out sort of their responsibilities and let the administrator focus on smooth, efficient elections. Think about the office that has one, two, or three people, and you have all those same responsibilities because of the federal and state mandates. Without sort of training in those areas, you're going to have some deficiencies. Let's just face it. You're not going to get the same level of service that you would in a larger county. And again, I come back to, and most of the public agrees with me until they have the right to check. But here's the thing. A Dallas County, for example, I don't know why I'm not picking on Dallas. Let's move to Houston. We'll move to one of the other larger areas. So reaching out to voters for voter education or communications. You know, it's a great thing to be able to educate the public on the voting process and sort of what the important dates and sort of how to use those voting machines. But the county, the small rural county, doesn't have anywhere near the budget or the ability to reach out to their voters. So there's a disparity there. So again, you have this large county that has the ability to do it. We want to empower the small and medium counties. And EAC sort of sees ourselves, obviously we work with large counties, but one reason we have set up sort of meetings with smaller, medium counties so we can help support them as well. And I know this is a priority at the state level as well.
So that's really interesting. One fascinating thing that your office does is you put out election standards. And I spend a lot of time reviewing best practices for elections, right? From all sides of the political spectrum. And I think you put out the best election standards that there are. Question then is, if the EAC puts out these election standards, and by standards, I mean process standards for how to run a good election mm-hmm. that can be secure, it can be transparent, that people can have confidence in. Why do localities not always implement these standards? And maybe you've addressed some of it with the funding issue, but is there a bigger reason that people don't always follow these best practices?
Well, the state and localities are... particularly the localities, they're receiving sort of recommendations and sort of directives from the state level. So, you know, these are our standards are voluntarily, usually best practices sort of thing. For me, it's all about educating the election administrator on different ways of doing things so they have a context. It's educating the public as well and stakeholders of this is how, you know, a number of states are doing this. This is sort of core election administration. But when you're at the state level, you know, I served in two states, dealt with counties There are statutes and processes in place, sometimes by regulation. So I understand what most localities are focused like a laser beam on. Am I complying with the state statute in serving my voters? Because they have to follow the rules of that particular state. We don't have a federal law in many of these standards. They're voluntary standards or they're educational pieces. And so I hope that answers your question, that they are focused more on making sure they comply with the state rules.
It's interesting. Now, one thing we always talk about is elections are partisan activities, but counting votes doesn't need to be partisan. It's a transaction between people and their government, right?
Right.
And you look at big businesses, for example, that implement best practices. And, you know, we spend money all the time and we're fully confident that the right amount of money will be taken out of our bank accounts and deposited at that business's bank account, right? And we do it with paper, we do it with plastic, we do it electronically, we do it, you know, through any combination of payment systems, and it works. And I think a lot of the reason that we have confidence in that is because these businesses have to implement standards. You know, there's national standards that they have to implement, and our elections aren't always run that way. But you've got the standards out there, right?
Well, again, I'll say this. We are very decentralized, so it is almost as if every locality is set in some sort of standards. But, you know, they are voluntary. And this was a big debate back in 2000, how to create the AC and these standards. And in the end, it was a voluntary process. You know, we are an independent agency outside the executive branch. We're congressionally based, which is another unique feature of the AC. So we're not supposed to be part of the executive branch where they're telling us what to do, A, B, and C. And so you have the congressionally based agency and we're bipartisan. So they are voluntary. But at the state level, though, when there's a need and a requirement for sort of standards, and we saw this in 2000, that there has to be some level of the way things are being done equally across the board within the state, or there's going to be legal problems. So you see a lot of states that will provide those standards or at least guideposts for localities. But I always said, you know, I mean, still counties are going to do things a little bit different in Texas from the urban areas to the rural areas, or in Florida, very similar. I just want to make sure we have flexible uniformity. I would say as long as we get from A to B and you're with me at B, be as flexible as you need to be.
That's a really good point. And you've talked about how the EAC provides support and training and everything else for these counties. So we hope that we can get this process more smoothed out going forward. So we're about out of time, Don. This has been an incredibly illuminating conversation. I want to take this one last direction before we wrap up. There has never been such a focus on election process, I think. Mm-hmm. We've talked about machines. We've talked about poll books, things like that. Going into the 2024 election, what are your expectations, or what do you see coming down the pipeline for this election cycle? And do we have hope that this is going to be better than what happened in 2020?
I think so. I think that, you know, election administrators are always trying to improve. And so you will see a lot of areas of improvement. I think a couple of them are you're going to see a lot more audits of all types of processes. You're going to see a focus on the chain of custody. You've seen a lot of improvement in that. The transparency, I think, is going to improve. I think just simply because election administrators are aware that the expectations are higher and that there is a need for this. They understand that if you have both political parties and candidates involved as part of the process, that they're much more likely to accept the result. And so you're going to have that. My big concern has always been less of the administration of elections. There's going to be some, unfortunately, poll books or voting systems that go down that may cause lines. That always is a very negative headline most of the time. We don't like that. My big concern, though, is having a natural or man-made disaster, even like the pandemic, but the pandemic was more drawn out. It's where you have to adjust the entire way you vote. I've seen this in the panhandle in Florida, mm-hmm. and in other states that have different types of disasters. And what that results in is voters can be are really going to have to adjust to voting if they want to participate. The election administrator may have half their polling places after a tornado. They may They may have floods with a hurricane. I've seen all of that, and it can be very, and half your staff is available, not near full staff. So we call this, you know, preparing for a disaster through a coup plan or whatever. That can have an impact on election, and the election has to take place. So you're going to have to sort of adjust, and that can be a sensitive issue, particularly in a general election where voters want to participate. But if Mother Nature gets in the way, it could sort of, you know, dramatically adjust an election. That's my concern.
Absolutely. And we've seen that happen. We've seen snow days. We've seen, as
we have.
You mentioned,
Virginia.
That's right. We've seen hurricanes, things like that, that affect it. If this happens and people hear about this somewhere in the country, walk us a little bit through the process that a local election administrator would go to. Should we have confidence that the election is being run properly, even in the middle of a disaster like this?
Absolutely. I mean, I can, you know, personal experiences in Florida where we're in the middle of an election. It's a significant election. So instead of being able to rely on your neighbors, which is probably step one, is that your neighbors will be there to assist. Everybody's running an election. So the reality of it is, and I'll just use Bay County, Florida, they were able to adjust where they created super centers. You saw the reaction basically in New Orleans after the flood in New Orleans and the recent issues in Louisiana with hurricanes. They all adjusted, and really the people, the citizens, were not complaining. They understood we're in the middle of a natural disaster. This is a right to vote. It's not great that it happened in the same period of time, but people were able to vote and cast and hear, have their voice heard. And so I think that what has happened in Florida and in Louisiana, what I've seen is that it all worked out in the end, but it really is an adjustment, and it really forces the administrator off their initial game. And it's where we all have to come together and make sure we can vote.
Come together. That's a great, great phrase there. Final question then. What can we all do as citizens to make sure that we're doing everything we can, that our elections are secure, they're transparent, that we can have confidence in the results?
Well, I think that number one, you need to be part of the process. And it's not just registering to vote and voting. I mean, that's just the minimum. If you want to be a part of it, you need to understand it and learn about it. Go to our EAC website. It's an easy way. You could read those materials and be a lot smarter. But in the end, you're going to want to visit your local election official and see how it is administered at the local level. If you have the opportunity to go to the state level and sort of talk with them as well, they're open to talking. Once you've learned that, you know, then you're a lot smarter talking with the legislature about policy goals that you want to see, what or areas that you have a problem. But look, as a citizen, you can be the spokesman or the watchman for your political party, your candidate. You can be there and understand what has happened and then explain that to the rest of folks that you associate with.
That's great advice. Get involved. It's always the best advice, right? So, Don, where can people find you? I know you've got a new podcast as well that we're excited to participate
in. Well, you can find me at Voting Guy on X, and it's now no longer Twitter. Yes, I have a new podcast with AEI and John Fortier. It's called The Ballot Box, and we invite experts and election administrators from across the country. And so if you get a chance to go to the podcast and listen, please do.
Thanks for joining us, Don. This
Thank
has
you.
Been exceptional. Once again, this is Josh Findlay with the Texas Public Policy Foundation's National Election Protection Project. We were joined today by Don Palmer of the Election Assistance Commission. A great conversation on election administration. Don, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.